Here's the secret to great radio, Jeff Merrick. I've learned it from the great Jim Rome. I don't listen to Rome anymore. I used to listen to him a little bit back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to producer Maddie about radio styles, and Rome always did something that I thought was very interesting. I don't know if it was just for padding time or the way he did things, but here's how every Jim Rome rant would be.
All right.
It would be taking something and saying it and then rephrasing it several times for effect. So, for example.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Sidney Crosby is the best player in the National Hockey League. The best player in the National Hockey League is Sidney Crosby. If you don't think that Sidney Crosby is the best player in the National Hockey League, you're a joke. If aliens came down from Jupiter tomorrow and said, Jim, who's the best player in the National Hockey League? I would say Sidney Crosby. 9 out of 10 dentists agree Sidney Crosby is the best player in the National Hockey League. Dear Jim, don't you mean second best? Signed, A. Ovechkin. Rack 'em.
It's pretty good, dude. You know, it's got to be hard. It's got to be hard when you're a one-man act and you have to carry a three-hour show. You resort to tricks like that. And I've always maintained the one thing about radio, unlike podcasts, because podcasts you just sort of take with you and generally, it's a conversation with a couple of people or more people. But when you're solo act on radio, generally, you're being listened to in a car. And a lot of times, it just qualifies as background noise. And that's why, you know, repetition is important for radio. That's why having the same voice there every day is important for radio. Because in a lot of ways, radio exists more as wallpaper than actually content. It's just a familiar sound that you like. And
yeah,
when
exactly.
when you're someone like Rome, who's that singular act, you need to do a couple of things. One, you need to repeat yourself in creative ways, say the same thing over and over again, but use a different frame around it every single time. And two, which is really smart, and I always tell, whenever I talk to college students that are taking radio. All you kids out there, pay attention to Don Cherry and your U.S. college kid. Don't take a good Canadian kid's job in the American League. We'll get more on that later. But it's fine if someone's CHL career ends. Like, I don't know, someone from the Windsor Spitfires last night. He can go to the Marlies and take a job. Okay, that's okay, though. The other little trick is, and it's not so much of a trick. I really think it's good because it helps the show breathe, is the only thing that gets people to pay attention to what you're saying on the radio is silence. Is not saying anything. Like, you ever been listening to your radio in your car, Wish, and it's just background noise, whether it's a song, whether it's you're listening to talk radio, whatever you're listening to. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, for an extended period of time, which in radio is anything more than 3 seconds, there's silence. What do? You grab either the volume knob or the tuner knob, and you say, hang on, do I have this thing? All of a sudden, you're paying attention. Like,
right.
Radio is that one format where silence actually makes you lean forward.
Yeah,
it's the only thing. And Rome does that great. He's got great dramatic pauses and great silence. But at the end of it, you're right. He's saying the same thing over and over, guys.
The one thing that's impressed me about Jim Rome and some other national radio guys is this ability to have a handle on most things. Like, granted, none of them have a handle on hockey. Like, there's no – Rome does okay, actually. He's had some pretty good guests on. I've heard him do some good hockey interviews. But, like, you know, to know everything about baseball, football, and basketball when those three sports are at their confluence is impressive to me.
Oh,
like,
God.
I could never do that. I'm so single-minded on hockey now, and also the NFL because I'm a Jets fan. Like, that's my sort of release point when I'm not covering hockey. But, like, you know, looking at baseball names – you know, I'm seeing like spring training tweets come out and like, I have no idea who any of these people are. And it makes me feel so out of touch sometimes with the sporting world. Like, for example, I actually sat down and watched I would say about 3/4 of an NBA game the other night. I was having a cigar at the cigar bar here in Alexandria. They didn't have hockey on. They only had one TV and I was being outvoted. So they had the Pacers Heat game on, which was a good game because it was for the best in the conference and these two teams kind of hate each other. And, you know, I'm seeing some names that I remembered from back in the day when I paid more attention to the NBA. But the one thing that struck me was, like, how brutal it was. Every time these guys came down the lane, it was elbows and it was flagrant fouls and shit like that. And I turned to this guy next to me. I'm like, is this the norm? And he's just like, nah, just when these guys play. And I was saying to myself, we got into a conversation about Ron Artest and how much this game would be better if Ron Artest was in the game and if the NBA allowed fighting. I'm always impressed by national, Bruce Arthur, for example. Like, the people have the ability to jump between sports and come off as an expert, even if they're kind of flying by the seat of their pants on some of this shit.
You know who's the best at it? And in my life and in my, you know, this little corner that I've carved out in this industry, I've always thought more vertical than horizontal. But what really impresses me is, you know, people that can do both, that can have a wide frame of reference and go deep with all of it. And you know who the main guy is like that for me?
Who's that?
Elliot Friedman. If you've heard Elliot hosting Primetime Sports, I mean, everybody knows Elliot, and he can, you know, go into deep water pretty fast with hockey. We all know that. But get him talking about baseball, and get him talking about basketball, and get him talking about football, the NFL and the CFL. And you realize this guy can take you to deep water pretty fast in all those sports. That, to me, is really impressive. You know me. I'm kind of a freak about hockey. Right? Like, I'll go deep water with NHL, with CHL, like, hockey history. That's my main sort of field of interest. I don't have the same level of enthusiasm at all for any other sport. I come close with MMA at a time. Growing up, man, I was all about boxing. God, did I love boxing. And baseball to a certain extent. But I just can't do it now. Like, my interests outside of this sport, for as far as athletics go, I mean, I love the Olympics. A lot of my tastes are sort of changing as far as athletic pursuits that I enjoy watching, because I just like doing them more than anything else.
Yeah, and the hockey thing for me was always like, I jumped into it with both feet only because I found it so much more entertaining and fulfilling than other sports. You know, like the NFL's a religion here, and that's understandable, and that's a different thing for me. Like, I'll never compare hockey with football, or my hockey fandom with football fandom, because it's a once a week thing. So that means that, you know, you maybe don't want to miss a game if you have a baby, you know, like Joe Flacco, but, you know, stupid rant the other day about Andrew Ladd. But the other thing is that, like, my Jets fandom is something that I was born into. And much like a Red Sox fan or a Cubs fan or whoever else, a Leafs fan, whoever else you want to put into the mix, like, that's the misery I live with, and that's a part of me. My misery as a Jets fan is a part of me beyond it being a football team.
Yeah.
It's like an experience that I share with my dad, an experience I share with others. It's like we're all in this together until we're not in anymore, and then who knows. But hockey fandom is something that I chose. You know, it didn't necessarily choose me, but I chose it because I love the sport so much, and I love the game so much, and the history of it so much, and everything about it so much. And so, you know, I think there are writers out there that got thrown into hockey, and then and then they became hockey fans, or they tolerate
they're the junior at the newspaper, and nobody wants to do the hockey beat because the hockey beat day is really long with morning skates and afternoon filings. And then staying at the rink till midnight every night. So it is a full, complete day.
That's interesting. Because I always figured that the junior hockey guy, the junior writer that becomes the hockey beat guy, it's like a dream job. Here it's not. Like, here, if you ask any newspaper editor, they're going to put the newbie on the hockey beat just because nobody else wants it. They're all there to get the NFL job.
I'm speaking of America specifically. I'm speaking of the United States.
Okay,
Canada, that's where you want to get to.
Yeah, all right.
That's where everybody wants to get to. But we've seen it before. I mean, how many beat writers have we seen, you know, as the junior person in their market at their newspaper, and he's on that beat or she's on that beat for 2 years, and then they move on, they get a promotion, all of a sudden, oh, don't have to do that hockey anymore. Thank God.
Yeah, here it's a different deal, but like for me it was always kind of like I was covering high school sports. I could have gone in any direction, and I chose hockey as my outlet as a writer, because I graduated from the ranks of the news groups with Katie Baker,
right,
and then started doing it on the side for publications as the internet grew, and so it just kind of that's the passion I chose to explore.
Let me ask you something about writing, and you know, being the new person on the beat at a newspaper and the morning skate, because you know the morning skate for hockey was first brought to the league by coaches who wanted to make sure that their players the night before games didn't go out and get hammered.
Right.
That's like, honestly, that's where the morning skate comes from, guys. Like, so that's a way to keep your guys in check. Oh, can't get too lit up. We got to skate in the morning. We have practice in the morning. Coach wants us in there so we can't get torched. But we're at a place now where guys just don't do that. By and large, do you guys go and have beers? Of course they're going to have beers. But right. By and large, right now, to exist in the NHL, it is very tough to exist as, you know, a functioning alcoholic, as a hockey player. Like, you're not going out and getting lit up every evening, the morning skate or not. Like, we're at a place now where players take themselves really seriously and look at themselves as almost mini corporations. Do you think, Greg, because there has been, you know, some coaches, I know Guy Boucher does this, I know in Carolina they've done away with it. During the playoffs, you do away with it. Do you think that during the hockey season itself, that the morning skate is there more for marketing purposes than hockey purposes?
Huh.
Because it gets everybody around the rink, and it gets you talking about hockey first thing in the morning. And it floods Twitter and it floods the internet with stories about hockey. Oh, what is this line combination? What did this guy do? Oh, who's going to be the starting netminder? That it is there for marketing more so than it is there for hockey.
No, I still think it's more of a function of routine for the team than anything else. If they wanted it to be marketing, whatever, I mean, I think they would just bring the guys out from the back and have a scrum like that instead. You know, during the playoffs, like you said, it's more along the lines of, here are three or four guys that we're going to offer up to you, reporters, and do as you will with them, more than anything else. So I still think it's more along the lines of discipline and structure, although I would agree with you that I don't think it's the necessity it used to be.
No.
Where these guys are getting,
no.
You know, we're face planting outside of the pub the night before. But yeah, no, I think it's still a function of hockey versus being a function of marketing. But it's a good question.
Hey, a great quote sent in by Matt Riegler talking about, you know, dramatic pauses and, you know, the gravity of silence. Great quote Matt Riegler sends in from Miles Davis. The most important notes I ever played were the ones I didn't.
Yeah.
It's a great quote by Miles Davis.
It's a very good quote. And then the other one was, where was this quote? Oh, yeah, Andrew Daly writes, and as much as I hate his guts, Mike Francesa does the pregnant pause perfectly, and it's a one-man show. I've often thought with Francesa, though, whether or not that was a byproduct of having a partner for like 20 years in Chris Russo on WFAN in New York, for those who don't know what we're talking about. Like, he had a radio partner for the longest time, and I always wondered if it was like that scene, those scenes in oh shit! What was the Siamese twin movie with Kinnear and Matt Damon? Stuck on You.
You're asking me?
I'm sorry. No, I was talking to myself. Obviously, okay. I was working through my problem.
Okay.
The scenes where they're Siamese twins, they get split apart, and then like they don't know how to function in life without having the other one attached.
Oh no! That's Strange Brew. Bob and Doug, when they get split up, they gotta save the brewery.
No, it's Stuck on You with. Someone just made an Elsinore reference this morning, by the way.
Oh, nice.
About how they wouldn't want to work there. And I'm saying, hey, and I said, why would you not want to work at a place with stormtroopers that play hockey?
Speaking of Elsinore Castle, I ran by what was Elsinore Castle in that movie yesterday. On my run. Yeah, it's Castle Loma in Toronto yesterday. It's a great hills there. So after the podcast, I went for a little run yesterday, and that's where I went.
Sweet.
So I thought about Elsinore Castle yesterday, too. Yo.
Whoa, it's something in the air. That? All right, question of the day today is a good one. It's going to get you all reminiscent about fun stuff, which is give us your favorite or most memorable miracle playoff run for a team. Now, what we're talking about here is not an eight seed that upsets a number one seed and goes on a run, although you may want to start thinking about those things for a later feature on the program today. We are, of course, talking about teams that made runs to make the playoffs, like teams that just caught fire and made crazy great runs to make the playoffs. At Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at NBSW, and then puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com is the email address to share your reminiscence. Mine, of course, is a pretty obvious one for anyone who knows me. It is the year the New Jersey Devils first achieved playoff glory in 1988. When they slid in on the last game of the season, John McClain's goal against Darren Pang and the Chicago Blackhawks, getting them to the playoffs the first time. But here's the thing that happened that year on the way to the playoffs. Sean Burke joined the team after playing for Team Canada, and Sean Burke went 10-1 in 13 appearances to get the Devils into the playoffs that season for the first time. And actually finished eighth place. This is how amazing Burke was, ready? And this is courtesy mm-hmm. of Hockey Reference. And I love that Hockey Reference now has this feature. If you don't know, they've added this on Hockey Reference. Well, first off, if you're not reading Hockey Reference, I don't know what the hell you're doing.
Wake the hell up.
It is the IMDb of hockey. It is the rabbit hole you will travel down and never come out of.
So good.
They've added awards voting. And I don't know how they got it. I don't know if they work with the PHWA or what to get the awards voting info. Mm-hmm. But now they have awards voting. So, like, you're looking down guys' stats from each year. And now next to their names, it's like what awards they finished in the top 8 for, top 12 for, whatever. It's amazing. So to bring it into back to Sean Burke, he played 13 games for the Devils that season. Okay, mm-hmm. He finished 8th in the Calder voting and 8th in the Hart voting. based on going 10-1 in a 13-game stretch. Like, that's how amazing this kid's run was, and that was an awesome way for the Devils to make the playoffs for the first time, and then obviously went on a bit of a run after that, too.
It's pretty sweet. For me, it was the 2008 Washington Capitals. Like, we're talking about...
Oh, very good choice.
And there's a couple of things, and one of them is a personal one that makes it really special for me. First of all, it was a fun team to watch. It was a great story because Glenn Hanlon floundering with the Washington Capitals. Here comes Bruce Boudreau, someone who, in a lot of ways, and it's kind of weird to think about this now because you kind of get the feeling that Bruce Boudreau is going to be in the NHL as long as he wants. But there was there were a lot of years when Bruce Boudreau was coaching Manchester and Hershey that we never thought that Bruce Boudreau would make it to the NHL. He was always considered, he wasn't a very polished coach. He wasn't, that buttoned down, good looking, young guy that's going to, captivate a room. He was, he's Gabby. He's Bruce. He's lovable Bruce, right? And for that reason, it's one of many reasons, no one thought he was going to ever get a shot at the NHL. And kudos to the Washington Capitals for on-ramping this guy's NHL career. So you had that story as well. The underdog coach finally makes it to the NHL. The guy's won everything going back to when he was a player and he won the Memorial Cup. Like at every single level, he has won the championship, period. The only thing that's eluded him is the Stanley Cup. So it's a great one, great run. And I can remember specifically, it was on game 82. It took the entire season to undo what Hanlon had done with the Washington Capitals and right the ship and correct it. And Ovechkin was a rock star in the NHL, and everyone was loving some Mike Green. And it was a great story. And on game 82, they beat the Florida Panthers to qualify for the playoffs. And there was joy in Mudville. And one of my the reasons why I liked it so much, I was in Florida that weekend, and I was flying back, and I was in the airport in Tampa, and I was watching the game at one of those Fox Sports bars.
Yeah,
they have one at the Tampa airport. So I'm sitting there and I'm having a beer and I'm watching it. But before that, so I walk in, the place is pretty packed, and as you can imagine, there is only one TV that's showing hockey. So I'm like the only guy watching this one TV. And so I saddle up to the bar and I order a beer, and guess what they said to me? It made my frickin' day, Wish.
What's that?
Can I see some ID? Oh, I love it. I'm like, I've been waiting for 15 years for someone to ask me for my ID. It felt awesome. I got carded. This is 2008, bud. I got carded. I was 39 years old. It was fantastic. It was so fun.
I don't even know.
When's the last time you got carded,
that,
dude?
Oh, I get carded now and again. Now, really? Now that I got some significant gray going on, I got like the Mr. Fantastic hair on the sides a little bit going on. I think I get carded less than I used to, but I do have that cherubic Bob's Big Boy baby face that keeps me keeps them guessing.
No, I loved it, man. I was so happy. And then the Caps won, and I was loving the story. So
there was one day I got carded at the grocery store, and I had my daughter with me. And like, I'm like, okay, so I've got some gray in my hair and I'm carrying a child. Do you think this is an elaborate setup so I can buy a six pack of beer?
just a prop to get some Michelobes.
How far am I willing to take this ruse? I have forged my own birth certificate. I have a child. I put coloring in my hair. Now can I have that six pack of Schlitz?
That is a good idea though. Beer prop, the kid. I mean, you have to really be depraved to do it, but you hang out the outside the liquor store. Hey man, you want to rent my kid for 10 minutes for $20? Take the kid in with you to buy some hooch.
I just want to point out that Jeff Merrick just suggested that you rent out your kid to a stranger at the liquor store for $20.
Yeah, next month I'll be on the cover of Today's Parent magazine.
I would love to take your kid, and it only costs $20.
$20?
Yeah, just bring him back whenever you're done. Okay, I'll have him in my van.
Oh, jeez. Okay,
what favorite lollipop does he like?
Let's not go dark here, bud. Holy smokes.
All right.
I'm just using the kid as a liquor prop.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're only using the child to buy liquor. Oh, okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Very good. For underage kids.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. But I went dark.
We've run out of things to talk about on the podcast.
All right.
I was always wondering when we'd hit the stage of this podcast where we've officially run out of things to talk about. Where we're trying to talk about hockey every day for an hour for so many years before it's not interesting anymore.
All right.
We're at that place now.
With that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
When I had my vasectomy a couple of years ago, one of the great thrills was I got to sit around and watch Littlest Hobo episodes. It may be the greatest theme song for any television show I've ever heard in my life.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Well, the littlest
littlest hobo, the littlest hobo. He's eating out of cans and playing with his dog. Littlest hobo, he's jumping on trains. He needs such a pie because he's so little.
Debate Hockey.
The show's not actually about a hobo?
No, it's about a dog. It's a hybrid of a German Shepherd and a Husky.
The dog's a... It's about a dog?
Yeah, dude. You've never watched Littlest Hobo?
No!
Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Yay, Littlest Hobo. Merrick versus Wyszynski podcast. Joe Haggerty coming up to talk about the Boston Bruins. Couple of answers to the question of the day worth mentioning here. Ben Mathewson, for me, it'll always be the 05-06 Sabres expected to miss playoffs and made that miracle run to the conference final. That, of course, was a bit more of a playoff run than anything.
Hey, Hasek, by the way, you mentioned Buffalo. Hasek, 39, gets retired next year. How about that?
Yeah, and I just saw that Steve Wino tweeted that Ted Nolan and Dominic Hasek have had their first conversation since around 1997. So
really, eh? Oh, that's
maybe a thawing there of some sort.
That's good. That's good.
Kevin G writes in, gotta be the 88 Devils, 7-0-1 in their last eight and knocked out the Rangers in the last day. L and Jersey needed 7-0-2 to make it, this year. Coincidence? Total coincidence, sir. I don't think the Devils are making the playoffs this year. Justin, Cagliano writes in, even though they didn't make, this is one that you love too. You mentioned this when we were talking about this question the other day.
What's up?
Even though they didn't make it, the 10-11 Devils were so freaking fun to watch after
Lemaire awesome?
Took over.
Yeah.
That I have to mention them. That was one where like, if Lemaire had made the playoffs that year with the Devils, he wins the Jack. Well, like in a runaway.
Yeah, because it's an easy story to follow too. But you know what was fun about that too? He really brought out, or that run really brought out the personality of Ilya Kovalchuk. And I think we all turned ourselves around on how we felt about Ilya Kovalchuk.
Didn't we
all of a sudden was like, you start hearing the reports that, hold on a second, everybody loves him in the room. Hang on, he's a really positive guy. Hang on, everyone really loves Kovalchuk. He's not that guy that we thought we knew in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you think?
No, for sure. And I think that he kind of found a little bit of fun and that sort of thing. And I also think it was one of those situations with when Lemaire left, he quit after they lost to Ottawa in the first round. I'll tell you why I'm laughing later. And then went to Minnesota and just became the man there. You know, the style of play Minnesota played for several years was Lemaire's style. And then kind of that style fell out of favor, and so did Lemaire. So for him to come back and have that moment of reclamation with the Devils was also pretty impressive for that.
Oh, man. Okay, this is pretty funny. There's a guy on Craigslist. This is a tweet. I'm just following Rob Ford tweets here. There's a guy on Craigslist that wants to pay someone $125 to follow Rob Ford around for a day playing a tuba.
Why?
I don't know. Because I think it's funny. I think they think is like, actually, you know what? Oh, this is actually terrible. In the Western Hockey League, when Ken Hitchcock coached the Kamloops Blazers at various rinks, at the end of a period, when Ken would get down off the bench and walk across the ice, there were some arenas where they played the A&W theme. Ba bum ba bum ba bum. It's true,
because
man.
Because he's a little bit chubby.
Chubby, yeah. Hmm. I thought that was pretty mean.
Matthew Toy writes in, the Minnesota Wild in 2014, their chances were slim halfway through the season. Well, let's get to that in a second. The St. Louis Blues in 2011, amazing late run in the season as well. Let's talk about when's Hags coming on? Is he there yet, or can we have time to talk a little while?
He needs a couple of minutes. Coming on.
All right, so Minnesota Wild last night, they get dominated in their game against the Blues, and that sort of happens when you play the St. Louis Blues. No shame in that. But here's the issue with the Minnesota Wild all of a sudden. They're not playing good hockey, and it's getting away from them a little bit, and things are being exposed, like the goaltending is being exposed, and the coaching is being exposed. Great piece by Michael Russo last night detailing the way Mike Yeo has used Danny Heatley, despite Heatley being abjectly terrible for the last 2 months of the season.
Yeah.
Keeps on coming back to Heatley, although it looks like he might get a healthy scratch at some point in the near future. Minnesota right now, 85 points, 8 games left. Phoenix, 84 points, 8 games left. Dallas, 79 points and 10 games left. But here's the big key to this playoff picture. The Coyotes and the Wild play on Saturday in Phoenix.
Yep.
That's the key. Like, if you're a Dallas Stars fan, you're like, woe is me. We're five off the pace and six off the pace. Know that you have the opportunity. You have a guaranteed game where one of these guys ain't getting 2 points.
That's a big one, and big ups to Steve Hatsapetros. There you go. Easy one for me to say. Steve Hatsapetros, who's the schedule maker for the NHL, because you have Detroit and Toronto on Saturday, which is an enormous one as well for wild card ramifications. Guess who's standing by, Mr. Wyshynski?
Well, he's become a bit of the Matt Damon on the Jimmy Kimmel show for us, as he's been booked several times and then through happenstance has not appeared on the show. But he's one of our favorites, and we're very happy to have him back now. He is, of course, Joe Haggerty of CSN New England, and he joins us here on the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. Hello, Hags. How are you?
That would be awesome if you guys just at the end of every show said, we apologize to Joe Haggerty. We ran out of time. We'll have you on tomorrow. If that became a shtick with you guys, I would absolutely love that.
All right, from this day forward, sir, because as you know, there's not a single guest in the show that's more beloved than Joe Haggerty.
And then Joe's gonna do a parody video about sleeping with my girlfriend Claire. So that'd be wonderful too. Yeah, thanks a lot for that, Hags.
Hags, the Boston Bruins have 106 points. They've got 9 games left. They trail St. Louis for the President's Trophy by one single point, but have the big advantage when it comes to regulation wins. The Bruins seem to be cruising pretty good right now. Do you think that this is something that could carry over to the playoffs, or are they peaking too early?
Yeah, I don't necessarily buy into the peaking too early notion for teams that are serious Stanley Cup contenders. You know, I mean, the stat was thrown around out there that every Cup champion since 2009 with the Penguins has had a winning streak of at least 6 games in the last third of the season. So, you know, every single Stanley Cup champion has gone through one of these stretches where they've really played well and reeled off a bunch of wins in a row. The one thing I think you worry about, just with the Bruins and with any team like them that's really run away from the competition, is that they can get softened up at the end of the year. And, the shock of dropping into the playoffs and going against a team in the first round that had to battle every single night just to get in, that the shock of that can last for a game or two and you can find yourself down in a series before you know what's going on. You know, you would expect that with a veteran team like the Bruins that's been through it before and a lot of different players that have all kinds of experiences on the spectrum, from not being ready to play a playoff series, from thinking a playoff series was over and then losing 4 straight games, you know, to winning the Cup and winning a bunch of Game 7s and everything else. The core of this team has been through everything from A to Z as far as the playoffs go. You would expect that that's not going to be the case. But look, any first-round matchup where it's a team that's clinched everything going against a team that had to fight tooth and nail to get there, I think there's going to be some trepidation on the part of the favorite in that series. There's no question about it.
When do they start resting guys, Hags? At what point does, you know, Chara start to get a little sit-down? What time, you know, maybe a veteran like Jerome McGinley? At what point do they start sitting guys?
Yeah, I think it's going to happen soon, but maybe not this weekend against the Flyers in the Capitals. Claude Julien basically saying, like, if they rest guys now, they don't feel like it's going to actually give them too much of a benefit for the postseason, because by the time the playoffs start, it's still, you know, far enough away where that rest will sort of have gone by the wayside by that point. So I would expect to see within the last 3, 4, 5 games of the year, you're going to see guys sit. Maybe something like Zdeno Chara not going on the road trip through Minnesota and Winnipeg, which I'm sure they might have a few hands raised among Bruins players that would love to skip that trip if they could. But Z, you know, maybe they tell him to stay home. He doesn't have to travel and go through the airports and the whole rigmarole that adds to the, you know, the rest thing. And, you know, Chara doesn't want to sit. He doesn't want to rest. But I think he understands at 37 years old that things are a little different than they used to be with him, and that, you know, it's more about getting the most out of him in the playoffs and trying to avoid, if they can, him running out of gas at the end like he did last year against Chicago. But, you know, they'll pick their spots with guys like Iginla, Chara, Patrice Bergeron, and Louis Erickson, who both played a lot of minutes in the Olympics and didn't get that much of a rest. All of those guys, I think, will get their time. And, you know, it's a benefit of the Bruins building up the cushion that they have with like a 15-point lead in the division where they're basically going to clinch this weekend. And the conference, 9 points in building over the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're running away with that as well. So they've allowed themselves to get some rest, and they're going to take full benefit of it. But I think this might be a little too early at this point. Maybe when they cross over into April, they'll start resting guys.
Let's talk about Chara. I think the Norris Trophy push for Chara is starting to get into effect. We know the campaign for Rask for Vezina, and I think Bergeron will probably win the Selke. But the Chara campaign for Norris is interesting because at the beginning of the season, when there was all that talk about him getting rest, about him getting fewer minutes, and his ice time is down by about a minute, I think, from last season and previous seasons. So make the case for me for Zdeno Chara as the Norris Trophy winner this year.
Well, look, he plays. He's the traditional Norris Trophy candidate, and he's the one, if you believe, that the award should go to the best all-around defenseman, the guy that lives up to the position, that he should be the guy. You know, he plays every single night, always against the other team's best players, without question. It's always the game plan that he will face the other team's best forwards, and it's every single shift. It's night after night. It's not, you know, picking your spots. It's not putting him in positions where, you know, he's going to do the least amount of damage as far as the defensive zone goes. He plays it, logs a ton of minutes, penalty kill. And not only that, I think everybody knows, and it's well documented, that he is the best defensive defenseman in the league and has been for a long time, and he is that defensive stopper and that intimidator. But he's also, you know, added a little bit more offense this year with by virtue of his role in the power play. And he's got an outside chance to score 20 goals this season still. And I think that's a nice round number that, you know, is a nice shiny object for PHWA voters that sometimes vote on the Norris Trophy with offensive numbers in mind. Yeah. And could really be attractive as well. And, you know, I was talking to Z about it the other day. And he did admit he's not a big guy on goals and numbers and plateaus and stuff like that, but he said there would be something cool about him getting one season at least where he scored 20 goals, and this might be the year for him. So if he can get to that level along with everything else he brings to the table defensively, I think he's got a really good shot. But, you know, you watch night in and night out. You watch him shut down the league's best players, the best forwards, the best offensive playmakers in the land, and I think it speaks for itself. Either you believe that it should go to a guy like that, or you believe that, you know, Erik Karlsson and players like that are deserving of the award when they pile up offensive numbers and don't really play much of a defensive role out there.
Hey, yeah, but Hags, you know, the biggest number for PHWA voters is still the plus 25, right?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me?
Hey, Hags, have you ever heard my defense of Zdeno Chara as a Lady Bing candidate?
No. I'd love to hear that one.
And I saw it again. In the game against Montreal, when you look at Zdeno Chara and when you look at how much havoc he could wreak upon the NHL, okay, like what he could do, like how many players he could lay waste to, and, you know, watching him go up against Brendan Gallagher the other night, and Gallagher comes up to his belly button as Chara just sort of laughed in his face instead of grabbing him and throttling him. When you look at the potential for damage that Zdeno Chara could do to this league, but chooses as a gentleman not to, that to me is Lady Bing worthy, more so than just someone who has, with all due respect to Ryan O'Reilly, and maybe even someone like who's that, Rob Scuderi, who don't have any penalty minutes this year. That to me is more gentlemanly than anything else that someone else can do around the NHL.
I like this, Jeff. I think we should call this the Jekyll Giant theory. I think that's what that is.
So essentially, Merrick's theory is that the American president should win the Nobel Peace Prize every year for not pressing the button.
For not blowing up the rest of the world.
For not destroying Europe, for not destroying the Middle East. Absolutely. You should get the Nobel Prize. I believe the president just won the Nobel Prize not that long ago.
He's already
gotten the nod. Hey, one thing I do want.
This was part of the argument, though, a couple of years ago with the whole Max Pacioretty thing, is that, you know, the thinking there that guys would get hurt like that playing against Chara all the time if he were out trying to hurt people, and if he was this evil, you know, vicious, vindictive player, that there would be a line of bodies strewn about in his path of destruction. You know, I think that, that you're right on with the argument that you're making, because he's big and strong enough. If he really wanted to hurt people, he'd be doing it on a regular basis. And
give that man the Lady Bing immediately. Retroactively as well. Hey, one thing, Hags, I did want to ask you about. I want to ask you specifically about the Boston Bruins blue line. And I was talking to someone a couple of weeks ago about that, and this person brought up the point that the system they play in Providence with Bruce Cassidy is exactly the same system that Claude Julien uses with the Boston Bruins in the NHL, in that, and it's hard to do, but once you got it, you got it, and the Bruins are playing it perfectly. The Bruins don't chase in their own zone. Like, you won't find defensemen chasing. How much? Right. I mean, and I'm guessing, Hags, that's why you see players come up from Providence into the National Hockey League on the blue line, a very tough situation on a very good team, and it's almost seamless.
Yeah, and when you see guys making the transition, like, you know, look at last year's playoffs when Matt Bartkowski and Tory Krug came up and played after not playing much during the year and really just went right into the fold, understood the system, understood what the Bruins were doing, and there wasn't that big transition during the playoffs at the time of the year when you need that seamless transition and guys to not be the weak link in the chain and understand what's going on in the defensive zone. And you're absolutely right. And I think that's one thing that you've seen throughout the years is that defensemen, when they come up, they get what's going on and they're able to just jump right in. And that goes from Johnny Boychuk years back when he came up from Providence all the way up to this year with Kevin Miller, a guy that I think is just the epitome of a Bruins defenseman with his, you know, vicious hits and punishing physicality, the fact he can fight and at least once a game. He just basically throws a guy off his skates onto the ice and into the boards because of his improved physical strength. But all these guys understand where they're going in the defensive zone. It's really interesting when you see a guy come in via trade in the middle of the year that didn't have that training down in Providence, didn't understand the system. Like, I remember Caberlet a few years ago, he would always go chasing guys behind the net with the puck in the defensive zone, which you're absolutely not supposed to do. Yep. As a member of the Bruins defensive corps, you got to stand in front of the net and build that box right in front. And he would do it time and time again. And I almost likened it to a dog chasing after a tennis ball where he couldn't even help himself. He just went and did it. You saw him do it time and time again and leave the front of the net open, and it was so against what the Bruins' philosophy is in the defensive zone. It sticks out like a sore thumb. But those young guys you're talking about that come up and do well, none of them do that, and it's a big help to the Bruins.
So the Bruins, I think, are everybody's prohibitive favorite in the Eastern Conference, especially with what they did against Pittsburgh last year and with Pittsburgh being kind of a little bit of a mess right now in some ways. Yep. But is there a team that the Bruins don't want to face? Because the flavor of the month answer to that question obviously is going to be the Montreal Canadiens based on what happened the other
right.
night. But is there a team in the Eastern Conference the Bruins generally don't want to face?
Yeah, I think it one of them is definitely Montreal, which would be in the second round most likely. Not just for the other night, though, because they've lost 6 out of 7 games to them, because Montreal, really, of all the teams in the East, still seems to be in the Bruins' heads for whatever reason, you know, because it's their rival, because the games are hyped up, but gets them rattled more than other teams do and gets them out of their game and gets them frustrated and taking stupid penalties and retaliating. You combine that, their style, the things that guys like Emelin and Subban do, to get the Bruins out of their comfort zone and to get them worked up. And you combine that with the speed that they have and the skill level that they have and the aggressive speed on the attack that they have. And those are a couple of things that really poke at the weaknesses of the Boston Bruins and can really exploit them. And it's that kind of a team, a fast team, a team that isn't willing to fight but is willing to antagonize you into taking penalties and turning it away from a 5-on-5 game. I think those are the kind of teams that will give the Bruins the most trouble, and that's exactly how the Montreal Canadiens are built. And, you know, this goes back the last 2 years. The Bruins have had a really difficult time beating that team whenever they play them. I still think, you know, 5-on-5, they should dominate. They should wear them down physically, and they should win that series. But I think it does pose a problem for them. The other team that would be interesting and that I think could give them problems just by virtue of the players on the roster and some of the old warriors they have on that team and a team that you feel like would really just rise to the occasion of the playoffs is the Detroit Red Wings. And it looks like that could be a potential matchup for the Bruins in the first round. And that would be a difficult draw for them if you get Datsyuk and you get the Wings and they're sort of hitting the fountain of youth a little bit and going after them. Those are the two teams that stick out in their mind. But at the end of the day, I feel exactly what you said. The Bruins are hands down the best team in the East. I thought the Penguins would give them a series, but now I'm doubting that, seeing what's going on there, and that really it's the Bruins' conference to lose at this point going through.
Hey, and by the way, don't worry about the Red Wings. After I wrote a story giving Mike Babcock the Jack Adams, they're not winning another game,
right,
apparently, so everything's fine.
It's the curse of Wyshynski.
The famous Wyshynski kiss of death. There it is.
Unlike
right
the
Red Wings.
Unlike the SI cover of hockey journalism. It's just stay away.
Hey, Joe, last one here from this little microphone. And you mentioned Louis Erickson earlier on, and I felt as if there was one person in the NHL who needed the Olympics, it was Louis Erickson. Spent a lot of time in bandages this year. How beneficial was the Olympics, or were the Olympics, to Louis Erickson? I really felt that that was a situation where this guy needed to finally get playing hockey.
Yeah, he did, and he needed to get feeling like himself again. You know, it was starting to get that feel like it was a lost season for him. Mm-hmm. When he got off to a little bit of a slow start, he didn't really sort of fit in with the way the Bruins were doing things system-wise, and he didn't really have a lot of chemistry with his teammates, and you could see him just doing things that were alien to the way the Bruins, you know, break the puck out of the zone and bring it up the ice, and he was sort of doing things the Dallas Stars way rather than the Bruins way. And then the concussions got involved, and that really slowed down his progress. And it you know, once he started to really seem like he was getting things, he was getting knocked out of the lineup for a month at a time, and he really needed a steady time where he could play. He was playing big minutes. He was playing like, you know, 18, 19, 20 minutes a night for Team Sweden, and he was playing in all situations, and he was playing with good players and seeing results. And I think that boosted his confidence level back up and got him to where he is now. And really another part of it that I think has really been underplayed is the fact that he's playing with Carl Soderberg, another guy, a fellow Swede, a guy that he's developed some really good chemistry with on that third line. And really, as good as the third line was and the top three lines were when the Bruins won the Stanley Cup 3 years ago when they had Ryder and Peverly and Kelly, this third line of Soderberg, Erickson, and Chris Kelly right now, with Kelly sliding over to the wing and Soderberg playing center, is the best third line that they've had throughout Claude Julien's time with the Bruins. And I think they're really going to be able to do some damage against third defenseman pairings in the playoffs. And you can already see Erickson is playing really well off of Soderberg, but Soderberg is an absolute beast that I think is going to explode in the playoffs. He's like 6'2", 6'3", 220 pounds. He plays around the net, and he plays big and strong. He just knocks people over, tipping pucks and getting rebounds. And he also has the mind to create plays and to make things happen offensively. And as long as nobody gets hurt and they can keep the forwards composed the way they are right now, a lot of defenses on a lot of good teams in the playoffs are going to be overmatched by the Bruins' depth among their forwards, and you can see it with the way that they're scoring goals right now.
Hags, you are a friend of the program, and of
yes,
course
sir.
A friend of Canucks fans as well. We should always point that out, that you're one of the more popular people amongst Vancouver fans.
Canucks fans, Penguins fans, Montreal Canadiens fans. Wish I am so well-loved and liked and respected around Twitter from these opposing cities. It makes me smile every time I look at my mentions on Twitter. It really does.
All right, Hags. Well, the playoffs are almost here, and you can, of course, make new friends all over the league. And we will talk to you soon, sir.
Thanks, Hags.
I look forward to really pissing people off in Detroit and see what they bring to the table. Take it easy, guys.
They're good ones. They got some venom. Thanks, Hags.
See you guys.
There he is, Joe Haggerty.
Mikhail P. writes in, no comment on the locomotive Yaroslavl Cinderella run.
Yeah.
2.5 years removed. That's actually one of the reasons why we were going to bring this up today, to be honest with you, is that locomotive, if you don't know, has taken out the they're an 8 seed,
mm-hmm.
and they've taken out the number 1 seed.
That's right.
And they've taken out the number 2 seed. Number 1 seed was defending champion over in the KHL, and the 2 seed as a number 8 seed. If they have to win today, I should say, if they win today, I think to complete that task. But yeah, it's been pretty amazing.
Great story for the city. Great story for the organization. Great hockey story. And you know what? It adds another chapter into what's already been a really interesting career for Dave King, who went there and is coaching Yaroslavl. And if you haven't read it yet, pick up The King of Russia, which is Dave King's they won 4-2. Maddie says they won 4-2, so there you go.
All right, so they have knocked off the first and the second seeds.
If you haven't read The King of Russia, it's a book all about, written by Dave King, former NHL coach, Team Canada, the whole deal. Coaching in Metallurg Magnitogorsk. It is a fascinating look at, now mind you, it's a couple of years older now, but it is a fascinating snapshot of what the KHL was when Dave King went and coached there.
And as long as we're reading stuff,
hey, let's read.
Let's pimp Katie Baker's piece on her time in Russia talking to Mike Keenan. That's on Grantland. And let's pimp out Ryan Lambert's piece this morning on Puck Daddy, the Puck Daddy Guide to the 2014 NCAA Men's Hockey Tournament.
It's long, dude. It's really long.
It covers the entire thing. Every team, every aspect. It goes into which teams have what players that are properties of NHL teams. It's one of those situations where if you're like me and you want to parachute into this tournament, not knowing dick about shit about any of it, then read Lambert's piece and you'll be educated and you'll know all about it.
It's excellent.
And that's the reason why we publish it, and it's very good. But read those two things as well as that Dave King book. So we want all of that done over the weekend. There will be a quiz on Monday.
Yeah, have something on our desks 9 o'clock Monday. Hey, do you think this is true? Sarah Paddock tweets this in, our good friend in Pittsburgh. I bet the server – this is my little Tampa story. I bet the server carded Jeff Merrick in hopes of tips. Hashtag pandering to your elders.
Oh,
I never thought about that before, but that's a great ploy. Because you know what? I'm sure it worked. I felt great.
Oh, it's –
man, Sarah, you just ruined that for me.
That sounds like a server tip. I always like talking to people. But first of all, if you don't, here's a plank in the Greg Wyshynski platform. If at any point you worked within the food service industry, you are a better person for it, and we will get along, and you have an understanding of life that is on a higher level than those who did not. I always love talking to waiters and waitresses and bartenders about tricks like that. I always am fascinated by it. How do you get people to leave a table? How do you get people to give you a bigger tip? How do you spot who's going to be a problem customer? You know, all that shit is stuff that I'm really fascinated by.
Well, it's funny because Claire, when she was at art college in Leeds and playing for the Sheffield Shadows, pro hockey, ladies and gentlemen, she worked at TGI Fridays to help pay for her schooling in Leeds. And she said that she noticed specifically, and she read something on this too that sort of backed it up as well, that when you bring the bill, or when you bring the bill at the end of the meal, if you put the bill on the table and then bend down so you're not looking over the person when they get their wallet out, the dynamic is they're looking as if they're above you as opposed to you're above them. She said, dollars to donuts, you'll get a better tip. You know when the waitress comes over and does that sort of kneel at your table, it sort of hangs out, puts her arms on the table, sort of slouches down and crouches a little bit? That's a deliberate tactic, dude.
Interesting.
Because psychologically, you feel above that person, and you're giving them something out of the goodness of your heart, as opposed to someone being over you or above you, and you're not going to be as generous.
Interesting. I think there are some places that don't allow that, too, where they make you stand up there and not crouch down.
There was one. I remember Claire telling me the story. There was one couple who would come in every week, and let me know if you've ever heard this before. And they would have a stack of money, okay, on the table. And the one guy would say, okay, this is how much we're prepared to tip. Every time we don't feel we're getting proper service, we'll take a bill away. So not you're getting it all at the end, but you're watching your money, your tip money dwindle if you're not giving that table proper service.
I had the idea once to hand out evaluation cards with my tips to kind of explain the amount. And that's on ones that obviously the meal didn't go all that well. Usually I'm a 20%er, like across the board, but I always thought what that would be like. And then I thought to myself, if we ever went back to that place and the same server was there, you could not even quantify the amount of fluids from bodies that would wind up in our food. all right, with that, it's time for a Friday favorite.
It's Game Show Friday!
Yeah, there's the prepackaged Game Show Friday introduction.
Saving your voice.
Once again, it's not me. Not me. Joining us now on the line, he is joining us for an exciting Game Show Friday. Mm-hmm. He is Dave Block, and he is from Traverse City, Michigan, sir.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave.
Greetings, gentlemen. How are we doing?
We're doing well. Do you go to the Traverse City tournament?
Not only do I go to the tournament, I actually volunteer helping out there. I'm the PA announcer for the tournament and for Red Wings camp, yeah.
Oh, okay. So how far back do you go with that tournament? And what I'm ultimately getting at is, were you there when Pavel Datsyuk made his debut?
Sadly, no, I was not there for that. The first year I was there was 2008 when Dallas won the tournament with James Neal, and Fabian Brunstrom.
Okay, because the
unicorn.
For the people that were there for that Traverse City tournament, I remember talking to one person who said that Datsyuk was out there alone on the ice, and he did this thing where he lined up about a dozen pucks along the blue line, okay? And you know that move where you scoop the puck up on your stick and you spin and you fire it over the over your shoulder? We've all seen that move before, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Datsyuk, this is crazy. I wish someone had video of this. I'd love to see it. Datsyuk did that all the way down the line with the pucks. And I don't know, he didn't get it every single time, but most times he was trying to hit the crossbar. And at least half to three quarters of the time, he was able to grab it, spin at the blue line, fire it over his shoulder, and hit the crossbar. As everyone's jaws were just like, who the F is this guy?
Well, I'm glad that you cleared up the who you are thing, because the minute you got on the phone, I said to myself, wow, this guy's got a better voice than me than your Merrick.
And me, yeah, it's true. Don't take our jobs, jerk.
Yeah, jerk.
No worries there whatsoever, gentlemen.
All right, Dave. Well, you are the contestant on Game Show Friday. You were the seventh emailer, and that means that you, of course, get to play the game. Today's game is a celebration of playoff upsets. Obviously, with all the talk about the wild card and talk about locomotive today, we like to theme Game Show Friday to what we're talking about on the show. And in this case, whoever makes the wild card will be in a position to maybe take out one of the favorites this year. And we thought we would look back at eight seeds that beat one seeds in the National Hockey League in the playoff format that we just retired from 94 until last season. So it's eight seeds over one seeds, and that's the Game Show Friday bit. Are you ready to play, sir?
I am absolutely ready. I was even prepared if we were going to go farther back there, thinking that Quizmaster Merrick would be preparing some chestnuts from the 1920s.
Oh, now, hang on a second. You want to talk about the 1930 Boston Bruins?
No.
What can you tell about the 1930 Boston Bruins? Who had the best winning percentage in the history of the NHL. What happened to them against the Montreal Canadiens?
They did not beat the Montreal Canadiens.
Was it a 3 out of 5 or a 2 out of 3? What happened?
I believe it was a best out of five.
It was a two out of three, and they lost two games in a row, and they were out. It was the first time Boston had lost two games in a row all season. 0-1.
Can we just talk about for a second that when I suggested this as a topic, Quizmaster Merrick, he of the tough questions, said, I don't know, that might be a little difficult for the listeners.
Well, no, it could, because, I mean, how obscure can you get with upsets, Wish? And I'm not sure how many people, and I know, because I know I don't. I don't know the entire landscape of playoff hockey and the history of upsets.
Prepared the questions, and we're going to make this happen today.
All right.
Okay.
I've calmed down now.
All right. Ready? Question number. Oh, by the way, you have to get a 6 out of 10. We demand a D average from our listeners, and if you get 6 out of 10, then producer Matt will send you a fabulous prize of his choosing. Question number
Excellent.
One. Yes, sir.
You're a big Smashing Pumpkins fan, right? Do you know the
Damn
video
right.
from 1979 with the bumper sticker, "Proud parents of a D student"?
Nicely done.
Gentlemen, this is your listening audience.
Oh, brilliant. Billy Corgan, by the way, is going to have a wrestling reality show on AMC.
True.
Did you see that, Merrick?
Huge wrestling fan. By the way, if you're a Smashing Pumpkins fan, you haven't heard the cover of 1979 by Honey Honey, you're not doing yourself any favor.
I have not.
It's
so
excellent.
Check that out.
It's outstanding.
And if you're a music fan, you've not heard the Smashing Pumpkins cover of Clones by... Alice Cooper. Do
really?
You a favor there and listen to that. It's
very good,
too.
Musical tips on the show today.
Although my favorite Pumpkins cover is probably their cover of Dreaming by Blondie. They turn it into a really sort of melodic and just beautiful song.
I love Dreaming.
What the hell are we talking about here? Oh, that's
right.
Let's
start with Debbie Harry. F this.
All right. You ready? Here we go, Mr. Block. Here comes Game Show Friday for you. Eight versus one upset edition. Question number one, how many times has a number eight seed beaten a number one seed since the NHL changed its playoff format in 1994? A, 8 times, B, 9 times, C, 10 times, D, 11 times.
Ooh, number of times. It certainly happened plenty of times, and I've got several of them kind of at the top of my head. I'm going to go with 9 times.
The answer we were looking for was 10 times.
Nine times. Ferris Bueller.
9 times. All right. 0-1. It's okay. They'll only get harder.
Fantastic.
This number eight seed completed a 5-game upset of the Vancouver Canucks on a Jarrett Stoll overtime goal in 2012. Name them.
So what he's asking is which team did Jarrett Stoll play on in 2012?
The 2012 Kings.
You can't have it both ways. Either it's going to be too tough or it's going to be too easy, okay? I'm trying to find the sweet spot.
I like how you couched the real question of this. in this question about the playoffs.
Jarrett Stoll was a member of Los Angeles Kings. The Los Angeles Kings was the team that Jarrett Stoll played on.
Total. That question was totally Jim Rome. That's a Jim Rome question.
All right, one for two. Number three, in their 2010 loss to number 8 seed Montreal, this Russian Washington Capitals forward fired 44 shots on goal in 7 games without scoring a single goal. Name him.
He of the Coca-Cola advertisements in Sochi there, Alex Ovechkin.
I am sorry, I have tricked you, sir.
Oh,
the name
you
we are looking for is Alexander Semin. Yes, Alexander Semin. But I put the hook in the water, Merrick,
totally
on that one.
Did.
Oh,
which Russian sniper? Okay, mm-hmm. For the Washington Capitals.
Mm-hmm. Takes a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's good. That was well done.
All right, question number four. In 2009, the Anaheim Ducks upset the President's Trophy-winning San Jose Sharks in 6 games as this goalie only gave up 10 goals in the series for the Ducks. Name the goalie of the 2009 Anaheim Ducks.
Jonas Hiller.
Correctamundo. You are correct. We are 2-2 as we enter into question number five. In 2006... the Edmonton Oilers upset the Detroit Red Wings in 6 games. I'm sure you remember that. Current Ottawa Senator scored a controversial game-tying goal and series-winning goal in Game 6 for Edmonton. Name this current senator.
I remember that goal. It was very impressive and indeed very controversial. I would be Alex Hemsky.
Correct. Aces. So 3 correct so far. In 2002, the Canadiens upset the Bruins as a number 8 seed. Now, here's where the question gets a little tricky. In total, the Bruins and Habs have met 33 times in the playoffs, the most for any two teams in the National Hockey League. Which two teams have met the second most number of times in the Stanley Cup playoffs in NHL history? Hint.
Oh.
Hold on, hint. They're now division rivals again.
And they may or may not be playing tomorrow night.
Oh, God damn it, Merrick!
I was thinking it might be along those lines, but that just seals it for me. That would be the Maple Leafs and the Red Wings.
You know, he could have said the Capitals and Penguins. He could have said the Red Wings and Habs.
Because Dave sounds like an old Norris Division
he
fan.
Could have said the Jets and the Blackhawks.
No. Could have said the Rangers and the Bruins, one of the great lost feuds of all time.
But they were not in the same... In 2000,
no, it's not the Nordiques and the Whalers.
No, sir, it is not. In 2000, the San Jose Sharks upset the number 1 seeded Blues in 7 games. Both coaches in that series are still in the National Hockey League with different teams. Name them. Sharks and Blues, 2000.
Blues that year, another one, the President's Trophy, and that's Joel Quenneville that was the coach there.
Mm-hmm.
Sharks in 2000. Oh, it's 1 or 2 guys.
5.
He's the he's the enemy of Smiley.
2-1. Your name, please.
Daryl Sutter.
Daryl Sutter.
Yeah, the enemy
beautiful,
of Smiley.
Beautiful, beautiful. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 correct. You need to get 1 out of the next 3 in order to win the prize.
Excellent.
In 1998, the Ottawa Senators eliminated number 1 seed New Jersey in 6 games, leading to this head coach resigning in the offseason.
That'd be your boy Jacques Lemaire, right?
That would be correct, and you have won the game show. And actually, a reference I made earlier in the show, which is why I was chuckling at myself when I brought up the fact that Lemaire left in 1998. It was a spoiler for Game Show Friday. 2 questions left, sir. It's just gravy. It's gravy on top of the sundae for you right now. In 1995,
on top of the poutine.
Oh, listen to who's near the Canadian border. In 1995, the New York Rangers eliminated top-seeded Quebec in 6 games. Give us the team captains for the Rangers and the Nords that year.
Tough one.
Ooh, captains those years, because that would have been the last year of the Nordiques before they became the Avalanche. Joe Sakic was wearing the C at that point.
Correct.
And Messier was still in New York at that point.
Correct. You are correct on both counts, sir. Well done there. And finally, in 1994, this is more of a Marekian question than a Wyshynski question. Ooh. In 1994, we all remember...
Is it about the 2007 Subway Wolves?
Jason Bonsignor was on that team. Maybe he was on that team with Nick Foligno. Mike Foligno was coaching that team. Sorry, go ahead.
In 1994, we all remember Archerus Urbe upsetting the Detroit Red Wings in seven games. The San Jose Sharks became only the second team in NHL history to make the second round in their first playoff year. Which team did it first in 1975? First NHL team to make the playoffs and reach the second round in their maiden playoff voyage.
You want a hint?
No, don't give him a hint. He's got the whole thing wrapped up. You've been hinting the entire game,
Eric. Well, that's an interesting story.
I think it's because it's an interesting story on why that would be, because I think we're talking about the 75 Islanders and their 3-0 comeback against Pittsburgh, right?
Correct. Esto correcto.
Yes. Yeah, what was your story?
That was just it. They were the second team to come back after being down 3-0, which was the first team, by the way, Smarty Pants.
42 Maple Leafs.
And who are they down 3-0 to?
It would be the Wings.
Sounds like I might have done well going modern with my game show Friday, because it seems like you've got the old school on lockdown. Are you part of Merrick's secret society of nerds?
Are you in the Society for International Hockey Research?
How does one get into that, by the way? That would actually be kind of right up my alley.
It's very complicated. You go to the Society for International Hockey Research website and you sign up, and it costs the princely total of, I think it's only like $25
a
year.
Mm-hmm. But you also have to kill a baby and eat its stem cells.
Yeah, it's like gang initiation. There is one awkward thing you have to do. Once you get past that, you go to therapy for a couple of years, then you're in.
I know people that work in the OB ward at the hospital here, so.
You gotten in. You're all good.
Jesus. All right, listen. Thank you for joining our macabre humor, and thank you for joining Game Show Friday. Congratulations on your big victory.
Let me ask you one more thing about Traverse City. I mean, how many times have you either seen or come in contact or talked to Gordie Howe?
To be honest with you, I've only seen him a couple of times. I've not actually had the pleasure of being introduced or shaking my hands or anything of that nature, but I know that our civic center is named after him here, Howe Arena.
Right. I just Googled you here. You're Super Dave TC on Twitter, right?
That is me, yeah.
Hey, Wish, you know what he has in his bio?
No.
You'll love this. Lover of tacos. I'll let you guys.
Damn right. Take it from here.
Does that mean like you're like a taco snob, like you have to have the corn tortilla and everything, or does that mean you have love for Taco Bell in your heart?
Yes.
That's the correct answer. Are you Super Dave based on Super Dave Osborne?
No, it was just a nickname given to me when I was an intern, and it's carried over all these years later.
Why, can you heal yourself or something? Do you have a power that we should be aware of?
If only it was that simple.
Gotcha. All right, listen, thank you for joining us on Game Show Friday and listening to the podcast. You're obviously a dedicated listener to know as much as you do about Merrick and myself. And we will talk to you down the line. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave. Oh, by the way, anything
Thanks
to
pay? Thanks a bunch
for having me. Oh, yeah. Oh, anything to plug.
Yeah, we missed that last week. What are you plugging this week?
Oh, can I do a couple of quick plugs here? Got to plug Ferris State Hockey going up against Colgate at 4:30 in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Go Dogs. And for the Traverse City Hounds, who are our local Junior A team, which I am their PA announcer as well, they are taking on the Sioux Firehawks in the Midwest Junior Hockey League Championship Series starting tonight.
Very good. Have you ever got to any Whalers games, Plymouth?
You know, I used to live in Plymouth, and I went to Whalers games all the time. That's part of why I brought up the 07 Sudbury Wolves, knowing that the Whalers beat them to win the OHL championship that year. That was a great team.
It's interesting. That team is—they're on a run of like—I mean, how many years in a row have they qualified for the postseason? I mean, we know with junior hockey, it's ebbs and flows, but every year Plymouth is right there.
Yeah, this is what 22, 23 years.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous.
They're tough against Guelph this year, but it's an impressive run.
Well, listen, I got a boogie. I got a radio thing.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah.
I hate to break this up.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, bud. Stay on the line. Maddie's
going
to take your
guys.
Info. Thank you.
Yeah. Our friend Patrick in St. Louis wants to chat on the air about hockey, so I need a boogie. But thanks, everybody, for another amazing week. And thanks to Dave for hopping on Game Show Friday. Thanks to Hags for hopping on.
Hey, Maddie,
we're not going to do the Hags gimmick today because obviously he was on the show.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Obviously an amazing weekend of hockey that we should all celebrate. Saturday night's going to be a complete shit show. Saturday is going to be a shit show. I'll be over at Caps in Boston on Saturday, but obviously Detroit and Toronto on Saturday. Just games all over. Phoenix and Minnesota. Dallas has a twofer. Over the next 2 days, they're at they have Nashville at home tonight, and then at St. Louis. It's going to be great hockey over the weekend, and do check it out. And thanks again, everybody, for listening and participating in the question of the day and all the other stuff. And we will talk to you soon.
Monday specifically, we will talk to you again. Thanks everyone for a fun week. Enjoy your weekend. Wish, I know you got a boogie and do some radio, and that's
bye.
All groovy. Bye. So we'll get rid of you. Thanks everyone for tuning in this week. Everyone for playing along, and don't forget at this time next week. All of our MVSW friends in Chicago, I'll be getting on a plane next Saturday morning and heading there, with my brother-in-law, James. We'll be hitting up somewhere on Saturday night. One and all of you, please come along at a location to be determined yet. And then taking in the, Chicago St. Louis game on the Sunday morning. That would be the NBC game of the week. So if you're in the Chicago area, next weekend, let me know, and we'll get everyone together. And if we find something at the bottom of a beer glass or a wine glass or a brandy snifter, so be it. Anyway, have a great weekend. Thanks for playing along this week and being part of this goofy little podcast that Greg and I like doing so much. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday. Goodbye.